First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Governments aren't doing nearly enough to deal with climate change, and time is running out. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at the newest landmark UN report on climate and what it means for Florida. Give us a call now, 549-2937. Then later, they're the backbone of our healthcare system, even the global healthcare system, but they're hidden in the shadows. The new film Nurse Unseen puts the spotlight on Filipino nurses. That's later. But first this morning, a new landmark report out this week from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, says that the world's ongoing use of fossil fuels will push planet Earth to dangerous levels of warming by the beginning of the next decade. That's in less than 10 years, of course. Now, the report does say there's still time to limit warming, but only if we radically change course and substantially reduce the overall use of fossil fuels. Here's what UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres had to say about the new report.
Dear friends, humanity is on thin ice, and that ice is melting fast. As today's report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, details, humans are responsible for virtually all global heating over the last 200 years. The rate of temperature rise in the last half century is the highest in 2,000 years. Concentrations of carbon dioxide are at their highest in at least 2 million years. The climate time bomb is ticking. But today's IPCC report is a how-to guide to defuse the climate time bomb. It is a survival guide for humanity. As it shows, the 1.5-degree limit is achievable, but it will take a quantum leap in climate action. This report is a clarion call to massively fast-track climate efforts by every country and every sector and on every time frame. In short, our world needs climate action on all fronts, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Just like the Oscar-winning film. Now, to recap this, the landmark 2015 Paris Climate Agreement called for all of the nations of the world to keep global average temperatures below 2 degrees Celsius while pursuing efforts to keep them below 1.5 degrees. In the years since that agreement was signed, 1.5 degrees became the global climate goal. We're nowhere near it. How do we get there? We're pleased to welcome two experts this morning as we say hello to reporter Bob Berwin of Inside Climate News. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here again.
Good to see you. We're also joined by Melissa Kenny, Director of Research and Knowledge Initiatives and Principal Environmental Decision Scientist at the University of Minnesota's Institute on the Environment. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. Great to be here.
And folks, we want you to call us up. Florida especially is at risk to the impacts of climate change more than just about any other state. And if you think that this is a hoax or that this is a long way off, well, that's just not true. This is something that we're going to experience in a much shorter time frame than perhaps you realize. So give us a call now with your questions and comments. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. We'll get to your Facebook comments in a moment. Bob Berwin, Inside Climate News, let's begin with you. We heard from the UN Secretary General saying that this report is an urgent clarion call for the world to decarbonize developed countries by the year 2040, and developing countries by 2050. We're not going anywhere near in that direction. Tell us more about what's in the report.
We're not going anywhere near in that direction. And the report really is a clear warning. It's hard to say it any more clearly than the Secretary General did. I'm looking really forward to hearing Melissa Kenny's thoughts on all this too. I think of the report as in the global context. I wrote national governments haven't done enough, and wanted to acknowledge that there's actually been a lot of action by governments at various levels. But the report clearly shows that at this national global level, the idea of limiting greenhouse gas emissions to achieve that temperature target is not really happening yet. So it's kind of a scientific checkup on how we're doing toward reaching the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement.
5492937, Melissa Kenny, this report is even more urgent than the other ones that have come out, pointing out that the average global temperature will exceed the 1.5 degrees Celsius limit, at least temporarily. Can you explain for people what that means? How will that impact people's lives? How will they process this and experience this in their lives?
Well, Melissa, thank you. I mean, one of the things about this report is that scientists are really putting the sirens on full blast. This synthesis, which is the result of three previous reports, as well as three special reports produced by the IPCC in the past 3 years, more or less is the cliff notes that highlights how we need to take action now to eliminate our fossil fuel use and also adapt to the changes that we're already seeing. For example, in Florida, depending on where you're located, you're already experiencing about 2 weeks of days that are hotter than 95 degrees Fahrenheit. In the next several decades, depending on the choices we make today, Floridians could experience as much as 3 months of above 95 degree temperatures. These high heat days already impact the health and livelihoods of children, elderly populations, vulnerable people, Black and brown communities, especially who locally experience even higher temperatures because of the urban heat island effect. And so this is not just a something that we'll see in the future. These are impacts that we are already experiencing today. And the rate of change is one of the reasons why this is such a problem and why we need to act now. We can change the course of this, but only if we take bold actions now.
So heat waves, heavy precipitation, flooding, both inland flooding and ocean flooding, droughts, tropical cyclones, just a parade of horribles that we've already started to experience here in Florida. Bob Berwin, the science has been clear for a long time. The world's leaders have met on this issue multiple times, and yet no action. Can you talk about why the political will is not there yet to make the changes that we need to make? Because they're actually pretty dramatic changes, and they would be disruptive.
You're getting right to the core of the question here. So I guess, first of all, I wouldn't say no changes, because had we not had these regular science reports, and then as a result of that, for example, the Paris Agreement, we arguably could be in a worse place than we are now.
And can you explain why? Can you talk a little more about that?
Well, I think that the even though we haven't met all the specific requirements of the Paris Agreement, there have been efforts in a lot of countries to move in that direction. Without that, emissions may have been even higher than they are now.
All right. Go ahead,
that,
Melissa.
Bob, as of 2021, eight countries have achieved net zero or pledged to do so by 2020. And so there are some examples of where the Paris Accord and other country actions are moving the needle in the right direction, but it's really clear that even though we're making some progress, it's incremental and there's a lot more that needs to be done by everyone: policymakers, financial institutions, investors, citizens, consumers, and even people's own household. And the real dire warning is that we need to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions in the next 15 to 25 years. And it's not that this is that there's no known solutions. There's a lot of technologies that already exist right now. Some folks predict that we could reduce our current emissions by 40 to 70% if we start aggressively taking action. given technologies that already exist. So things like uptake of rooftop and utility scale solar installations. Wind power is one of the most rapidly growing renewable technologies. We're seeing an increase in energy efficient buildings, and electric vehicles just last year captured 5% of the market share in the US, which is this critical milestone for large scale adoption of those kinds of technologies. So I'm not just saying this is easy. This is really, really hard, but we got to the moon in a decade. And this is a similarly challenging problem that we're going to have to aggressively pursue, just like we did when we tried to get to the moon.
It's 5492937. Now, all of the things you're talking about are starting to happen, Melissa, but not quickly enough and not in a large enough scale. Individual actions matter, but that's not the same as governments really turning on a dime and enacting the kinds of policies that would get us to the point where there are no more greenhouse gas emissions in a decade. From what I see, the political will isn't there. And for just as one example, here in Florida, the most vulnerable state, by the way, to these impacts, I have learned in my own home just how difficult it is to try to install rooftop solar in the state of Florida. You would not believe how difficult it is, how many obstacles are in the way, how utilities put obstacles in homeowners' paths to try to prevent them, really, from obtaining rooftop solar in the state that needs it the most. So that's just one example I could point to of what a huge challenge this is. There's almost a hopelessness that I see when I talk to people about this, a sense of dread.
Please don't give up hope.
That's why we're having you both on, because people need hope. So how do we get hope back? How do we have hope about this issue and this problem?
Yes, well, I mean, innovation happens at all scales. Government is one scale of innovation that happens from our local to national to these international bodies. And to kind of combine federal policy with one of the findings of the IPCC report, one of the major findings was that the current global financing to support climate actions is too small given the scale of problems. And so a lot of times what we're doing is we're focusing on reactive solutions. We're taking actions given immediate risks that we're already facing or in response to disasters, instead of building resilience and significantly decarbonizing that will put us on a pathway to support our communities for decades and well into the future. But I think one of the things that has happened within the U.S. in the last year was we actually passed the most aggressive climate legislation that we have ever enacted. The Inflation Reduction Act, also called the IRA, is the largest federal policy that's ever been adopted related to climate change. It directs almost $400 billion of implementation funds to existing technologies or approaches to reduce carbon emissions by 2030. If you want to know the details, it has a lot of funding for corporations, but also for homeowners in sort of the form of tax incentives, grants, and loan guarantees. And I would say for households, this can be a game changer in implementing those improvements to your home that will reduce your carbon footprint. It might not solve that problem of some of the barriers of getting rooftop solar that might happen in more localized contexts. But I think there's going to be greater demand and push given mechanisms like the IRA, because IRA includes thousands of dollars of tax credits and rebates for consumers who buy electric vehicles, install solar panels on their rooftops or other renewable energy sources on their property, buy efficient appliances, or make other energy efficient upgrades. That level of investment in reducing your household's carbon footprint could also save you annually up to $200 a year in electricity costs. And the benefits are intended to go to everyone, but also to focus on those that have been most disadvantaged. And so the Justice 40 initiative ensures that 40% of the benefits of these federal investments to communities that have faced environmental injustices. So there is action that's being taken. And I think what we want to do is we want to build off of, we want to take full advantage of these kinds of mechanisms, because IRA potentially has the opportunity to really change the landscape of technology scaling, which allows for greater technology adoption of things that already exist.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the new landmark UN report, more urgent than ever, citing a closing window to decarbonize the planet to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. On Twitter, Josh says Jacksonville just hit a record for the number of warm weather days in the winter. This is going to keep on happening. We'll go to your calls now at 549-2937. Cliff in Riverside. Hi, Cliff. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, nobody ever talks about animal agriculture. There's always these technology solutions that are actually out of everybody's kind of reach. You know, you have to wait for big government to do something. But if you just stop eating so much meat, you'll feel better, you'll save money. And apparently animal agriculture contributes more CO2 than all forms of transportation combined. So just stop being so, eating so much darn cute little animals.
Thank you, Cliff. Yeah. Bob Berwin, Insight Climate News. I believe he's correct that is a major driver of our warming planet. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I can speak to it in the context of this new report, the IPCC report, which is really sort of the scientific basis for all the actions that Melissa was describing before. You know, this report kind of shows that things like agriculture, not just meat cultivation, but other types of agriculture, palm oil, and, you know, all these things combine to disturb the climate system, to disrupt the climate system, in many cases leading to more CO2 emissions. So systemic changes are needed, from individual choices about what type of diet you have, up to looking at subsidies for the fossil fuel industries that drive the demand for fertilizer in a lot of cases. So yeah. It's pretty complex.
It is. And this report, Melissa, calls for dramatic societal transformations in the way we eat, to Cliff's point, the way we work, the way we get around. Basically, this report is saying we have to change everything about the way we live. And human beings are notoriously resistant to change. So this is a problem.
Yes, it can be a bit tricky, but it also creates this tremendous opportunity to envision the future that we want to grow into. When there's large-scale challenges like this, sometimes it creates the opportunity not just to make small changes around the edges, but to really spend the community engagement time and investment re-envisioning communities that we want that will help to support easier, more carbon neutral transportation options that would allow public and non-car technologies and approaches to be adopted, that would make it easier to use a sort of deploy all of the different kinds of approaches and superpowers in order to reduce the carbon footprint, because the caller is right. It's not just the transportation sector or the energy sector. There's emissions coming from a wide range of sectors, and we've got to be thinking really creatively about how we transform energy use in buildings and make materials more efficient, as well as transform our places so it makes it easier for people to make choices that are as convenient as it is right now to drive and use fossil fuels.
And by the way, sorry not to cut you off. We cover these issues, let me remind folks, in depth at our digital magazine, adaptflorida.org. Check that out, where we examine how Florida is going to have to adapt to these changes. Bill on the north side. Bill, good morning.
Yeah, two Good morning. Two things. I live in an area that has a lot of asphalt, like a lot of places on the west side and north side in Jacksonville. I'm sure this is on Donna Deegan's list. You know, I won't hold my breath if she gets elected, but, you know, doing something about all this asphalt, you know, getting rid of it, covering it over, planting trees there. I don't know what the right answer is, but I'm quite certain that, Donna Deegan won't address that, even though I'm a Democrat. The other issue is,
well, to be honest with you, both the mayoral candidates have talked about improving infrastructure, but go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, improving infrastructure. Well, I'll hold my breath, you know, I will. But in the meanwhile, my other issue is there's a lot of people out there, I think, that would vote for Democrats, but they can't bring themselves to do it because the association the party has with LGBTQ. And so I know that the two things don't seem related, but they are. If the Democratic Party would drop all this nonsense, they're trying to make 5% of the population feel better. We could might be able.
All
to
right, Bill, I'm not going to entertain that. OK, I'm not going to entertain that. But although I want to ask Bob Berwin about his comment about asphalt earlier, Melissa talked about the urban heat island effect. That is going to be an increasing issue here in Florida. Bob Berwin, can you explain a little bit about that, getting to his point about living in an urban area without much of a tree canopy and why that is going to be an issue? It already is.
It already is an issue, and it's going to contribute to, you know, really, really serious and dangerous heat waves over the next few decades. That's one of the things that this report points out, you know, with growing certainty each time these scientists review thousands of studies in volunteer teams, often volunteer teams of hundreds of scientists. This global warming puzzle becomes much more clear. And, you know, they can say with great certainty that what heat levels are going to be like. So in order to adapt, cities are going to have to change. They're going to have to change and hopefully transform themselves into much greener places and use more reflective surfaces and cool themselves down.
Here's
an
email. I think
the IPCC is planning on doing a special report on cities in this next upcoming assessment cycle. Again, this is kind of an ongoing review that started in the 1980s. The world governments, all the governments said, hey, we can't ignore this problem anymore. We need these reports on a regular basis to make policy, like
to drive policy changes.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to denigrate the other caller. It's just that, you know, we're just trying to stay on topic when it comes to climate solutions here. Here's an email from a listener. What can anybody do about China? They're building dozens of coal power plants, which are the dirtiest around. The U.S., Western Europe, and Canada are spending hundreds of billions to reduce emissions while countries like China sign agreements and then ignore them. Melissa.
I think this highlights that everyone needs to step up in order to solve this problem. And my philosophy is, instead of pointing fingers at others, first we fix problems that we can within our own communities and within our own nation. And this is really an opportunity because we are going to need a carbon neutral future. And we can either let other countries take over the global market share for those renewable technologies, or we can be the innovators. And so it's absolutely true that there are a lot of other countries that are emitting a number of greenhouse gases. But U.S. is one of the world's leaders in greenhouse gas emissions, and there's a lot that we can do if we decarbonize within our own boundaries and help to support other countries in adopting technologies, because we end up becoming the manufacturing leaders. And bills like the IRA are the Inflation Reduction Act are specifically designed to help to support renewable technology and manufacturing within the U.S. boundaries.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Reporter Bob Berwin of Inside Climate News and Melissa Kenny, she's Director of Research and Knowledge Initiatives, a scientist with the University of Minnesota's Institute on the Environment. Thank you both for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And much more still ahead later in the hour. Things to do this weekend and next, including the second annual San Marco Beer Fest. Sounds fun. But up next.
So in doing so, they created this natural pipeline for Filipinos to migrate to the United States when there were nursing shortages.
The new film Nurse Unseen and how Filipino nurses drive healthcare in this country and around the world. That's next. Well, due to our Navy base, Jacksonville has one of the largest Filipino-American communities in the country. That's why we might soon see a local screening of an interesting new project. Now, you might not have known this, but it turns out that the backbone of our healthcare system in the U.S. and even around the world is due to a group of unsung heroes, Filipino nurses. Yeah. Now, I learned more about this from Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Michelle Josue. She told me about her new documentary. It's called Nurse Unseen. Here's that conversation. Hey, Michelle, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And you know, with Jacksonville's large Filipino-American community, I think this is a topic a lot of listeners will be interested in. Tell us about your new film, Nurse Unseen.
Sure. So I come from a long line of nurses and caregivers. My great-grandmother was a nurse. My grandmother and my auntie, who was like our second mom, was a pediatric oncology nurse. So the history of Filipino nurses, and especially Filipino nurses in this country, is very embedded in my own personal history. However, just growing up, coming of age and trying to make my way in this world, it's something that I recognize I've taken a lot of advantage of and just took it for granted. And it was only through, you know, the death of my aunt and then, of course, the pandemic that I really started asking serious, more meaningful questions about the sacrifices of our community and specifically our nurses, and why exactly there are so many Filipino nurses in the United States. So all these questions got me, you know, thinking about what my next project could be, and that led me down the path to creating Nurse Unseen as a love letter to my family members, but to our nurses.
Why are there so many Filipino nurses?
It's a really layered, complicated question, actually. But I guess its roots go back all the way to when the U.S. colonized the Philippines, and in doing so, built a system of Americanized hospital system. So they trained all these nurses in the American model. Our Filipinos spoke English. So in doing so, they created this natural pipeline for Filipinos to migrate to the United States when there were nursing shortages in our country. So that's, in a very quick nutshell, that's essentially how that happened.
All right. And I guess what people might not realize, but they'll understand better after seeing the film, is that Filipino nurses are the hidden backbone, you say, of not only the U.S. healthcare system, but even the global one.
Yes, that's correct. You're absolutely right. So in making this film, I learned that the Philippines is the leading global exporter of nurses. So not only in the U.S., as you say, but there, we have Filipino nurses around the world, in Saudi Arabia, in the U.K., in Canada. I mean, really, we're everywhere. And maybe that also explains why we found out through a study in late 2020
why there were so many Filipino nurses that died from COVID. And again, that was also another catalyst for making this project. We learn in the States that although Filipino nurses make up only 4% of the registered nursing workforce here in this country, at one point they made up over 31% of the COVID nurse deaths. So that was really quite shocking.
Why is that?
Well, again, through the film, we explore that the reasons why they're so disproportionately affected is because a lot of our Filipino nurses are on the front line. So they're in critical care positions, directly at the bedside with patients in the ERs and the ICUs. So they had more exposure to COVID-19 on the front line.
Mm-hmm. And you follow particular nurses in the film and show what their lives are like.
Yes, you know, it was really tricky because we started filming during the pandemic, so it was hard to get into hospitals, and we wanted to keep, you know, our crew safe and, of course, the nurses safe. So a lot of it was told through interviews, just really getting in-depth with these ICU nurses and just hearing about their stories on the front lines. And then after we got our vaccinations in April 2021, we were able to film inside the hospitals and after the first and second wave and just see what that was like. And it was a really, really humbling experience. And I feel quite honored to be telling these stories of such bravery and courage and really dedication and sacrifice.
Now, you've been filming not just in America, but in the Philippines, traveling to work on this project. When might we be able to see Nurse Unseen here in Florida?
My dream is to be able to take this film across the U.S., and especially with communities of large, you know, Filipino nurses in them. But we are going to have our world premiere on the film festival circuit at the Cleveland International Film Festival in about 2 weeks, so at the end of this month. And then we've been invited to 2 other film festivals, and we're just hoping that word gets out and that we'll get invited to more and more film festivals and make our way to Florida. That would be amazing. So our hope would be this year, and then next year our film will be available to audiences around the country. But, you know, we are an independent production. We're still raising funds through Kickstarter just to get it seen. I mean, it's a true love letter. It's a true passion project for everyone involved.
Check it out at nurseunseen.com. She's Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Michelle Josue. Thanks. Well, it's National Agriculture Week, and spring is officially here. So we thought it was the perfect time to ask back to the studio the man known as the man in overalls. Yes, Nathan Ballantyne. He is a local expert on how to grow your groceries and has some ideas on what to plant this spring. Hey, good to see you, Nathan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. And by the way, if you look at our video stream, yes, Nathan is wearing his overalls. All right. So spring is officially here and people want to plant. What should they be planting right now?
For sure. Right now is prime tomato planting season. It's all those classic kind of charismatic spring veggies. So the tomatoes, the peppers, squash, cucumbers, green beans, zucchini, things of that nature. And those things thrive really well in early spring until it gets really hot out and into early summer. And that's when the things of spring start to wither a bit. So it's great to get a jump start on spring right now.
So the window's closing to put those seeds in the ground then?
So you can plant those up through mid-April, even to the end of April. But your yields for the spring season itself tend to go down with time just because there's kind of a moment in time when it's spring, just as we experience too. When we walk outside, we say, oh gosh, it's really nice out. Mm-hmm. Whereas you get to June and all of a sudden, just as we do, we say, oh gosh, it's really hot. Those things say that too in different ways. So tomatoes, though they may continue to grow as a plant, the blooms will fall off when it's over about 78 to 80 degrees at night. And so if you plant tomatoes much later, then the time that you can yield from them goes down. And that's particularly true of slicing tomatoes. So if you're planting right now, go for it, any kind of tomato. If you plant late into spring, then err towards cherry tomatoes and grape tomatoes and things like that.
And you teach people how to do this right in their own backyards so that they can grow their own groceries. Anyone can do this.
Every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how much is demand growing for this, would you say?
Well, we've been growing at about, oh gosh, what's the number? Probably 30, 40% a year for 6 or 7 years. So that's one measure of it. But there's a lot more folks beyond that that are interested than we see directly. But we engage with folks on social media, and there's gardening groups and things of that nature. So
yeah, people are really returning to this the way our ancestors lived, mm-hmm. growing their own little garden, growing their own produce. It's a basic human need, I think, to do this, and it's really satisfying when you see the little crops growing in your backyard or even in a little garden on your patio. You can even do it if you live in an apartment. You can even do a small version of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, container gardens and such.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it as part of this general trend towards kind of maker crafts having a comeback. So whether it's knitting or beekeeping or gardening, what have you. And yeah, it's a really neat thing. I think that folks are interested in finding ways to reclaim some of their efficacy in the supply chain, you know, and say, well, you know what, I actually can opt out to a degree from this globalized system that even if it's really efficient, it's not particularly robust. And so when there are these system disruptions, those mm-hmm. things may not work. And so it's nice to have a, you know, hand in it to say, you know, I can kind of take care of myself in these different ways.
Okay, so tomatoes, summer squash, zucchini, herbs like rosemary, oregano, thyme, sage. You know, I planted a little pot of rosemary mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't do anything to it. And mm-hmm. it's so hardy. It just keeps growing. That's a really good one. Even I didn't kill that one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, those perennial, the classic Italian herbs are really quite easy. So the rosemary, the oregano, marjoram, thyme to a degree, they thrive in kind of low moisture situations. They want to get water, but then they want to have their feet dry after a while. And so if you neglect them a bit, they actually thrive.
Yeah. Now, you also have advice for pest management, mm-hmm. pesky pests. Yeah. Tell us about this, because this is a problem for a lot of gardeners.
Sure. The biggest thing that you've got to understand is that pests tend to prey on weak plants. So if your plants are wonderfully healthy because they're growing in healthy soil, they're getting adequate moisture, they're growing in season, the number of pests that you have to deal with are just vastly less. Where people really run into problems most of the time is actually when they try to push things too far out of season. So if you try to grow lettuce in May or June or July, it's going to be infested with aphids because the plant is stressed. And that this sounds a little woo-woo, but if you dig deep into the science, plants actually emit a different spectrum of light when they are fed when they're stressed. Hmm. And so if they're growing in a temperature zone that's not their prime time, or if they're being fed, you know, lots of soluble-based chemical salts, mm-hmm. you know, inorganic fertilizers, 10-10-10, Miracle-Gro, they actually secrete nitrogen through their pores. And so pests smell that and they say, oh, well, yeah, like I want to lay my babies there because then they'll be able to grow really fast. So healthy plants is the root of it. And prevention, you know, in a bigger term, prevention is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And there are different organic solutions for when the pests do show up, but you're better served by doing those things on the front end, like mm-hmm. planting a mosaic of crops, having a diversity of things. So you don't just have, like, if you only plant lettuce, whatever the pest is that likes lettuce, when they come walking by, they say, oh, y'all, it's all you can eat Wings night.
Okay. So plant in season, plant diversity, native plants, all of that stuff mm-hmm. Is so important. What's the biggest mistake people make when they try to start this process and when they call someone like you for help?
Sure. I would say putting their garden in some place where they don't get enough sunlight is a big one. You need at least 4 or 5 hours of direct sunlight to make your garden really viable. Anything less than that, and it's really hard to grow, especially fruits and roots. And when I say fruits, I'm not talking about is a tomato a fruit, like that whole discussion if it's a vegetable. A tomato is a botanical fruit because it follows a flower. It has seeds in it. Mm-hmm. So anything that has seeds in it, or anything that's like a tuber, and the reason for that is because both of those structures in a plant are kind of like a battery, a plant battery. And the leaves are gathering the sunlight like solar panels, and they're kind of charging that battery. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have adequate sunlight, then you just can't charge a battery, right? So I see that as a mistake. And then soil, starting with poor soil is another big mistake that I see. It's a sad thing, but this actually happens with school gardens a lot because they're resource constrained. And so they say, oh, yeah, and we got all this soil. Somebody donated it. And I just think like, oof, like, yeah. Make sure it's good.
Make it good. Yeah. You actually have a solution at your business. You provide what you call magic mix.
Yep. Yeah, we do.
So it's really good soil.
Yep.
What all's in it? What makes it so good?
Yeah, it's a couple of different types of compost. There's organic fertilizer in there. There's crushed granite. There's kelp. Azomite is a volcanic rock in there. And worm castings to inoculate it with good bacteria and fungi.
Now, what you do is you'll come out to someone's home, you'll install raised beds filled with the magic mix, you'll help them plant, you'll even set up a micro-irrigation system, mm-hmm. a turnkey system.
Yeah.
Idiot-proof. Which is good, because a lot of people don't have the green thumb that you do.
Sure. Yeah, you know? And we guide on seasonal planting and such as well. Yeah.
Okay. So it is that time. The last freeze is over. So mm-hmm. there is this window now. And if people are itching to do this, they need to move quickly because it gets hot here so quickly that you kind of have to act fast if you're going to do this.
It does. Yeah. And like I said, you can plant through April, but the sooner you get on it, the more you'll get and the less frustration you'll have with heat and pest. Mm-hmm. And the trick is just at the end of that spring season, you move into the hot season. And there are crops that thrive in the summer, but they're just not quite the same as the spring crops.
Well, if this has piqued your interest, check out Nathan's website. He's Nathan Ballantyne, the man in overalls. You can't miss Nathan. He always has on these cool denim overalls, and he will come to your house with his magic mix and get you gardening and planting your own groceries right in your yard. Go to overalls.life, overalls.life for more. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa.
Always good to see you. And we will be right back with some ideas. Speaking of gardening, we'll tell you about the Late Bloomers Garden Club and their big show on A Clear Day You Can See Forever. That's next week. And also the second annual San Marco Beer Fest. That sounds like fun, too. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
Our favorite new healthcare books. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. Join me Saturday at 4 for What's Health Got to Do With It, only on WJZT News 89.9 Jacksonville.
Hey, y'all, it's Brittany Luce, host of It's Been a Minute from NPR. Let's talk about the public in National Public Radio. It means a lot. More diverse voices that really reflect America. More stories that resonate with you, your friends, and family. More stories from your community. And it also means we rely on your support to make it all happen. Do your part today by donating to this station right now.
Please call 353-9528 or visit wjct.org/radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the drag boom of the 1980s and 90s, which journalist Michael Musto described as the period when New York's club scene was filled with drag performers who perfected the art form. We talk with drag performer Linda Simpson, who documented that scene in over 5,000 photos. Tennessee's anti-drag law goes into effect next week. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
65 years ago, in Dawson, Georgia, a black man was beaten by police on his front lawn while his family and neighbors watched.
He was screaming, I ain't done nothing.
James Brazier died from brain trauma days after. What justice can be found all these years later? More from Buried Truths next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the earliest recorded flower shows appeared in the 1830s, and from the Victorian era right up to today, they are super popular. So don't miss it as the Late Bloomers Garden Club presents its new flower show, On a Clear Day You Can See Forever. It's at the Garden Club of Jacksonville next Wednesday, March 29th from 1:30 to 4:30, and Thursday, March 30th from 10 a.m. to 2. And this is free. Floral designers from Florida, Georgia, and other states around the Southeast will exhibit their beautiful creations, reflecting current trends in artistic design. We spoke with Laura Haley, a renowned designer of distinction floral designer, who will be presenting at the big event.
Flower shows are a perfect example of garden clubs to teach people how to know, sow, grow, and show. You should expect to see beautiful artistic interpretations of class titles in floral design, photography entries using creative techniques, landscape designs, and lots of horticulture that will give people ideas of what they can grow in our local area. The biggest hope is it will encourage the love of gardening and also concern about the environment. Environmental stewardship is a big part of garden club activities. But a floral design is my passion, so I hope people will be enthralled and awed by the floral designs that they see.
Again, that's On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, presented by the Late Bloomers Garden Club, next Wednesday and Thursday at the Garden Club of Jacksonville on Riverside Avenue. It's free. Go check it out. It's really, really beautiful. Also, the second annual San Marco Beer Fest is coming up April 1st in Bayless Park, right on the San Marco Square. It's an incredible showcase of this area's growing beer scene. Now, for more on that, I checked in with Lance Smoke, brand manager at Aardwolf Brewing Company.
We're expanding it a little bit this year with a few more breweries. We'll also have a Manifest there with ready-to-drink cocktails and Congreve and Pin with cider options as well as some seltzers. So even if you're not a big beer fest person, we'll have some other options for you, as well as a few food vendors, music from String Theory and John Munkin Institute, and a lot of other activities. Plus, you'll be able to enjoy all the shops of the Square of San Marco.
Sounds like a fun festival. And how do you see breweries, you know, driving economic development in the city?
They're a big part of Jacksonville right now. We've actually grown from when I first started here, from about 8 breweries to we're over 25 now. So a lot of growth and development there. Starts at 1 o'clock. Tickets are online for sale right now for $60. They'll be available for purchase at the door for $70. So go ahead and buy early so you can save some money.
That's the San Marco Beer Fest April 1st on the San Marco Square. Speaking of money, we're going to raise some money right here now with our own station manager, David Luckin, to support 89.9 and public media.
But we can't raise money, unless you call us right now at 353-9528. And we got great news today, Melissa. We're going to double your contribution if you're an existing member. If you're a new member, it's tripled.
Your dollar will go
doubled.
Thrice as far. Twice.
Very good.
But thrice.
I can't even spell that. 353-952 is the number you should call right now. Just do it now. We're one day away of wrapping up this pledge drive. We want to thank everyone who's participated. We know you don't like us doing this, but it's one of those necessary evils. And we're here because you actually do respond. So now it's your turn. We've waited for you for a few days, but it's your turn.
That's right. Now, if you can sustain us at $10 a month, if you're a regular listener, hey, that's worth $10 a month. We'll send you a thank you gift.
We got some cool ones.
A t-shirt, a baseball cap.
Cool. What do we call it? Distressed baseball cap, which is perfect for us. We're kind of stressed.
I know, right? No, it looks great. And you've even got an adapter to listen to our HD channels people can put in their cars.
And you know, the best thing about that, Melissa, is you can escape the news.
That's right.
We can forget everything you told us this morning and go to classical music, or we can go to The Independent.
These HD music channels, David and Matt Shaw have put together, are incredible. So you want this adapter for if you have an older car, I'm telling you. Now, you can also text in your donation. Make it really easy. Text NEWS 899 to the number 44321. Text NEWS 899 to the number 44321. And you can text in your pledge to Nonprofit News and Public Media right here on the First Coast, which is so great because so many people would prefer to do it that way these days anyway.
And we owe a big thank you to our executive board who actually put up their own personal money for this match. So don't let that money stay on the table. If you've been thinking about joining us and investing in this public radio station, do it today. It's doubled or tripled, and you're not going to get that opportunity again. So it's good business to call us today at 353-9528 and double or triple your investment.
That's right. And, you know, I hear from people all the time. They say, gosh, I love your station. I listen all the time. Thank you for doing what you're doing. You guys mean a lot to us. If you're one of those people, well, now's the time to invest and join our nonprofit news operation here at WJCT. Call 353-9528. We're going to triple your investment and send you a thank you gift. Or text NEWS 899 to the number 44321. Thanks so much, David Luckin.
My pleasure to be in here with you, Melissa. Great show today, too. You gave us lots of good information, whether we want beer on the weekend or we want a garden.
That's right.
And idiot-proof is the best way to garden.
I know. I learned that the hard way. By the way, all of you out there, enjoy this spring day. And thank you, David, Heather Schatz, Brendan Rivers, Isabella Da Silva, and Michelle Corum. Drop us a line anytime at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org.
It takes all of us.
That's right. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.